Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Cass R. Sunstein is a U.S. legal scholar and served as administrator of the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs in the Obama administration. He is currently the Robert Walmsley University Professor at Harvard Law School. He is a co-author of Wiser, Getting Beyond Groupthink to Make Groups Smarter, which is published by Harvard Business Review Press. Cass, welcome to Edgewise.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
And it's great to have you here because, as I was just saying before we turned on the microphones, we did an interview with your co-author, Dr. Richard Thaler, about 2.5 years ago. The book is called Nudge, and it was a very interesting book, very interesting premise. So great to have you here.
Great. Thank you for that. There's a relationship between the two books, actually.
Awesome. I'll be looking for that relationship. And if when you talk to Richard, tell him we said hello.
Will do.
All right. In the title of the book, you mentioned getting beyond groupthink. So that leads to the question, what's your definition of groupthink?
Groupthink is when you have a group of people whose members don't disclose what they actually know. They engage in a process by which conformity pressures and the kind of informational signals given by one another lead people to silence themselves and not to contribute to the group's ultimate decision. So a famous example of groupthink was President Kennedy's failed disastrous decision to go into the Bay of Pigs to invade Cuba, where a lot of his advisors actually knew this was not a good idea, but they conformed to what they felt to be the weight of judgment within the group, which meant that the ultimate judgment was a big mistake.
Yeah, and history is just replete with examples of people just doing what they were told rather than thinking
yes,
it through.
Yes. So there's actually two related things. One is sometimes a subordinate will just follow an order blindly without saying, actually, you know, that's going to get us in trouble. And sometimes groups who are on par with one another, it's not like someone's the boss, but they're all working together as part of a team. The apparent consensus within the group will drown out the views of people who actually have something really important to contribute.
What are the common errors in judgment made with groupthink?
The catalog of errors that individuals make, each of them has a parallel in group judgments. And in fact, the kind of kicker is that a lot of the mistakes individuals make, groups make worse. So I'll give you a few examples. Individuals tend to be a little too optimistic in most domains. About 80% of the population suffers or benefits from unrealistic optimism. There's probably good evolutionary and other reasons for that. If you're optimistic, you'll actually do stuff. But you need within a group, of course, people who are thinking about the downside. The tendency to be unrealistically optimistic mm-hmm. actually gets worse in a group. So if you have people who are thinking about launching a product, or people who are thinking about opening an office, or people who are thinking of adopting a policy, in the group they'll be more optimistic than they were
as individuals. Sort of feeds on itself, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So optimistic bias actually connects with a phenomenon sometimes called group polarization, which suggests that after people talk to each other, they end up getting more cohesive, more confident, and more extreme. And we have a lot of data on that.
I'm reminded of a poster. There are these successories posters that go up, you know, about teamwork and about individual spirit and climbing mountains and eagles soaring and stuff like that. And there's one of them that's a parody of it that says, in essence, none of us is stupid as all of us together.
That's great.
You know, kind
that's
of thing.
That's great.
Does the size of the group, when it comes to groupthink, matter? Does the size of it matter?
Yes, and it can matter in a few different ways. If you have a well-functioning group where people are alert to the risks of conformity pressures and drowning out dissent, if you have a big group where people are alert to that risk and you have a culture where the idea of being a team player is to contribute to the group's knowledge, then size can be a big advantage. You can get more diversity and you get more informational inputs. So a lot of good companies reach out actually beyond themselves to get public comments or to have contests and tournaments as Netflix has done. So there's a lot of information out there, and as the size of a group increases, there's an increasing opportunity to benefit from that information. The risk is if you have a large group, it may be that the early speakers end up being very dominant in terms of what the later participants say. So you can actually aggravate the problem of groupthink or the problem of group polarization and get very large collectives of people unified around a mistaken judgment or course of action. The Tale of the Emperor's New Clothes, mm-hmm. that's about a big group. That's a town. And there is wisdom in that.
What do you think about polling a larger group to base a decision upon, you know, polling a large group and doing a poll? Is there wisdom in a crowd? Is it a good idea to poll? Or, you know, what are the watch-outs? What should we be careful of if we go down this path?
Okay, so there's a French theorist from a couple centuries ago named Condorcet who came up with some arithmetic, which suggests that if you have a group of people who are making independent judgments, and each of them is more likely than not to be right, if you poll them, the likelihood that the majority or average is right goes to 100% as the group gets bigger and bigger. So that's actually an arithmetic formula, and it suggests something pretty cool, which is that polling very, very large groups can be terrific so long as, first, they're making genuinely independent judgments, and second, that each individual member is more likely than not to be right. Mm. And if you look at how for polling, people often now are taking polls of polls, not just one poll, but polls of polls, that's an application of the idea that you average large groups, individuals in large groups. So it can be a good idea. A good managerial strategy, if you have 10, 15, 30 people, is at least as an input, ask everyone to say what they think, and don't ask them to talk to each other first. That can be very informative if you have a good group of 10 or 15 or more. The downside of the polling is that if each individual person is more likely than not to be wrong, then the likelihood that the group is wrong goes to 100% as the group gets bigger. And the risk is if the people are interacting with one another and not registering their independent judgments, then the so-called wisdom of crowds starts to dissipate. So this is kind of a complicated set of principles. The big upshot is rather than chasing an expert, you should take a poll of a lot of experts. Rather than having a deliberative process in which one person maybe drowns out others, you should make sure either people are telling their independent views or they feel free in a group setting to say what they think, even if the leaders or the coolest kids in the room seem to have a different view.
I have a question about that. Is that really the best way to do it? And forgive me for simplifying this whole thing, but, you know, getting a room full of people and sort of saying, you know, we're establishing some type of safety. Everything that is said in this room stays in this room, whatever, that kind of thing. Don't you really run the risk, again, of sort of having the extroverts where the passionate people throw a blanket over everything? Isn't it better to meet with people one-on-one or walk me through
okay,
this?
Okay, so if you have a group of people in, let's say, a workplace culture mm-hmm. where people really feel free to say what they think so that even the introverts feel that the boss wants them to set forth their view, then a group meeting can be completely good. If it's the case that just because of how human beings are, or these human beings are, the introverts are going to shut up, then to have separate meetings can be better. I'll tell you, I worked in the White House, as you said, for 4 years, and President Obama is really very good at making sure that everybody in the room, even the relative introverts and even the people who don't necessarily agree with him or with a dominant position in the room, have their say. And he does that not just because he's a courteous person, though he is, but because he knows that sometimes that introverted person has something to say that will change the judgment in the room, including his own judgment. And that, I think, is a great lesson, whether you like this particular president or not, for good leadership.
Sure. It says a lot about leadership, really. The leader sets the tone. The leader establishes the culture. The leader throws that force field around the room or the group and says, this is what I need.
And one thing a leader can do, you're completely right, that in a group setting, there's a risk that the introverts will shut up or the room will go in a different course, and that will lose information that you'd get if you meet independently. Mm-hmm. So good leaders in companies all over the world, they kind of either know from their reading of the social science literature or just from their own experience that to be silent and agnostic at first is a clever strategy, even if they tend to have a clear inclination.
Right.
Because if
you go down your path there.
Because when I was in the White House, I learned quickly that my team, I had a team of about 50 people, they were excellent. And if I said early on, here's what I think we ought to do, then I wouldn't have the benefit of their excellence. And time and again, then these are civil servants with no political leaning particularly, they'd raise things that would reorient me and others because and if I had had the humility to shut up at the beginning.
Now, we always hear about the mistake of leaders surrounding themselves with yes men. I mean, and pick up a Dilbert cartoon, right? However, the flip side is the risk to your career when you're an individual contributor and you're playing the role of devil's advocate, you know, and you're sort of picking out all the details and all the challenges and all the issues. Do you have any advice for navigating the relationship with your boss when you find yourself in the role of the devil's advocate, other than wearing a T-shirt that actually says devil's advocate on it?
One good thing to do if you're going to disagree with someone in a position of authority, especially authority over you, is to have some sort of gesture at the beginning that is going to soften the interaction. So in both the private and public sector, there's a kind of cliched line that's familiar to many, which is just so you know. And that's a little bit of a bow of deference to make sure it's not like a knife. It's like
But it's a disclosure.
It's a just so you know. And then what follows that is going to raise often a problem mm-hmm. for what the leader tends to think. Of course, a lot depends on the relationship that develops over time between supervisors or bosses and employees. And it's mostly the boss's job to make sure that the employee feels authorized to suggest the boss is going in a wrong direction. But the employee often can, through techniques of deference, not of cowardice or hiding, but techniques of acknowledging that the boss is the boss, say, you know, there's another perspective or here's a different view. So there are verbal formulations that can soften the potentially unpleasant encounter.
Here at the AMA, we take pride in our noble cause, which is to help new managers, middle managers, aspiring leaders become better at their jobs, help them with their capabilities and their skills. What type of advice can you give, or how would you encourage these new managers and leaders to foster creativity and critical thinking in group meetings, in group situations?
Well, I think the first thing is to give everyone clarity that what it means to be a team player is not to make everyone smile and happy and feel that this was a good day, though that can be important, but is instead to add information to the group. So a good team player is not someone who everyone smiles when they think about that person. A good team player is someone who makes the performance better. And to say that explicitly can be really helpful. I think it's also good for a manager, especially when there's a hard decision being made that a number of people are involved in, to assign roles, to say that your job is to focus on this, your job is to focus on that, and the third person, your focus is elsewhere. And if you assign roles, it can be very formal or it can be just through conversation, then people feel freer to say the things that they think mm-hmm. and to say and to mean it that diverse opinions are welcome. That can be a big morale builder, but it also can be a really important safeguard against mistakes in the workplace.
We've been speaking to Cass Sunstein. He's, again, U.S. legal scholar, been in the White House, and he has a great new book entitled Wiser, Getting Beyond Groupthink to Make Groups Smarter. Cass, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. A pleasure.
AMA webinars provide 90 minutes of focused how-to instruction and specific solutions for solving your most pressing work issues. For $149, you'll participate in an in-depth course taught by an expert who will answer your questions and guide you through the process a step at a time. For a complete schedule of upcoming AMA webinars, visit our events calendar at amanet.org/events. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.